Welcome to DACOM Digital, the Digital Asset Compliance and Market Integrity Podcast. Solidus Labs hosts conversations with the builders, movers, and shakers of a safe and regulated crypto and DeFi industry.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another DACOM Digital podcast, where we have conversations with the builders, movers, and shakers of a safe and regulated crypto and DeFi ecosystem. We have a unique pleasure today to have with us Rija Rame-Loarison, who is the Chief Compliance and Legal at Meria, one of France's leading regulated platforms, and also, just one of the biggest experts I've got to meet about not only regulation in Europe, but also how do you actually turn it in the age of MiCA into compliance programs. Rija, it's wonderful to have you. Thank you for finding the time.
Thank you, Ryan, and thank you for inviting me. It's very, very pleasure to talk with you today. And I can return you the tribute. You, Solidus Labs, has the best solution I've ever seen on my lifetime, and even in the compliance part, and also the how it understands DeFi, it's very wonderful. It's the whole source of the solution. So I'm very happy to talk with you, to have a great discussion with you today.
No, thank you so much. It's funny, I'm blushing and I'm starting to sweat from your compliments, even though when we started the conversation, we talked about how today is one of the hottest days in the history of Europe. Yes. While here in the US, I'm speaking from Brooklyn, it's thunderstorms. So it's funny, based on the conversation, we're starting to change temperatures. appreciate it. Let's get going. I think there's too much expertise in your head that, I want to share with so many others who listen to this, trying to think about how their crypto firms should do compliance. So, but before we jump into that, I've never heard a crypto journey, and specifically a crypto compliance journey, that isn't interesting. And, you specifically are a very interesting guy. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your work at Meria and beyond?
Yes, about myself first, I am half Malagasy and French. I grew up in Madagascar during my first 18 years. And I came in France at 18 to do the university for education. I studied law. I ended it with a specialized master degree in compliance and AML. I started to work in the financial market, in a European leader on the financial market in the Groupe Exane Group. I worked in an asset management company within this group during my last years at the university. It was an internship during 1 year, where I worked and I discovered MAR. I started my the first step on my job as compliance officer when MAR was enforced in Europe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's why we get along together, because it's a great subject on which I worked for. It was also the implementation of MiFID II in France, and this experience was a very good asset for me to embrace crypto regulation afterwards. After that, I worked a few years at the world leader on the payment and transfer money transfer, Western Union. And after that, I joined the Meria because I was searching to not, I heard about crypto during many years as the Bitcoin has been created just 1 year after I finished the high school. And I did not have time because of the difficulty of the law study. I did not have time to document and to educate myself on it. So at the last years of my experiences at Western Union, I really wanted to embrace the crypto industry. So I took 1 hour every day to educate myself on it. And then I took the opportunity to join Meria when I saw that they were searching for a compliance officer. And I at the very beginning, I joined Meria. It was wonderful because I identified that my experiences from the financial market and the payment service was a strong asset to crypto, because crypto merged all the both of them. And that's why we are here right now.
Right. Well, I have a million questions. You know, many of them are about Madagascar, just because I'm, you know, it's one of the most fascinating places in the world for me. But I don't know if we'll get to go there, but just really, I hope I'll get to visit. So one question I always kind of ask you, before we jump into the crypto piece, which is the center here, but from a compliance perspective, you actually studied compliance. You knew you want to work in compliance. And I'm kind of curious to ask, how did you know? What made you passionate about it?
Madagascar has something to do with that, because, you know, Madagascar is unfortunately one of those countries where corruption is very strong and very well settled. And you are facing it in each part of your life and every day. And I see how the our corruption is steering down a country and the whole society. And I've been sensibilized, and I was living it from the very bottom of my heart and all my personal being. I saw that it is not good. And if we want to build a strong society, a strong economy, a strong government, you have to strengthen the ethics and to have a solid foundations. And that's why when I was searching for a master degree to get specialized in and to work in a job to work in, when I heard about compliance and the heard also the history of the reason why compliance is getting more important with years, I embraced this job, and that's why I am very happy and honored also to be a compliance officer.
That is such an interesting answer, because you raise such an interesting point, right? Because I think in a lot of places where there's very strong kind of corporate, guardrails and rules, in places like the United States, compliance is perceived as something that oftentimes is like a little bit back office, a little bit unnecessary. But you're speaking, and by the way, I'm rephrasing, so tell me if I missed anything. But you're basically speaking from the experience of someone who grew up in a place where those standards did not exist, and seeing, how related compliance is to ethics and to orderly business, etc. You're saying it was important for you to be able to. You really saw the importance of being able to do it right. So I think it's a really interesting point you're making there.
Yes, because for you, it's normal. For you, it's it has been settled. The ethic has been settled as the norm of the society. When you leave, you do not cross the road if the green light is not for you, et cetera, you know. But when you live in a country where there is no traffic light and there is no rule enforcement, you particularly in the US have a strong law enforcement. You are known as a country where law enforcement is very important. The Corruption Act has been voted and applied since many years and many decades. And you are so, as thanks to the strong leadership of the USA, all the Western society followed this path. But not for you, it is just the normal, you know. And when you live in a society where these things are not normal, you realize that, okay, human rights is fundamental. Corruption also is very fundamental to get the business done.
It's it's a really fascinating philosophical conversation, almost, I would say. To me, it connects to the general perception. You know, when we think about growth, we often think about the engines and not about the brakes. But at the end of the day, how fast a car can go depends, as much as it depends on how strong the engine is, it depends on how effective the brakes are. In a sense that none of us, and by the way, I'm sorry if you can hear those sirens. I'm in Brooklyn. It's part of the sound podcast episode. it's just natural here. I don't even hear it, but sometimes I remember that it gets into the recording. but
you know, it's good because it means that the law enforcement is still working.
The regulators are coming.
Yes.
But you know, it's just such an interesting point that, you know, having grown up in a place where, in a way, the brakes, right, were not as strong, you really, you know, built a big faith in how important they are, and that ended projecting you into a career in compliance. Super interesting.
It's not only brakes, Hen. It's brakes, airbags, so all safety. If you want to run the car, you can run it safely. If you know that all the safety equipment are okay, and that's how it works.
Right, and by the way, it's also, you know, that's also where regulators come in, because, you know, none of us would get into a car without not only knowing that there's brakes, but also knowing that a regulator said the brakes work, right?
Exactly.
Anyway, but I'll move us forward, because there's just so much more that I think, that I know you have to share, but let's talk a little bit about your work as Meria, because you've been there at a very interesting time, a time when early regulation of crypto started being introduced in France. And don't worry, I'll ask you a lot of questions about crypto regulation in France and Europe before we finish this episode. But specifically, you know, Meria is one of not that many firms that are already registered with the AMF, right? The Agence Marché Financier, if I remember correctly.
Autorité.
I really shouldn't speak French, because it's not, my French is very, very basic. But you know, it must have not been easy to get registered with a crypto company, you know, in such an early time, and the regulations weren't clear. So before we go into today, where regulation is more clear, can you tell us a little bit about those early days and what it meant to lead compliance for a firm like Meria and become registered?
Yes, at the very beginning, France is just to introduce the answer. France, we had the chance that France embraced crypto early, very early, at the last bull, the bull run of 2017. They identified it as an opportunity, and they set the legal framework specialized, dedicated to crypto. I used to say that they are using the methodology of progressive regulation. Okay, they saw that first thing, they applied the risk based approach, which is the good great principle in compliance. They applied the risk based approach, but from the building of the regulatory framework perspective. So they saw that, of course, there is investment protection, market integrity, which is necessary later. But first, the very first risk is AML, money laundering and financing terrorism and fraud, etc. So the very first level is that. And that's why the French regulators are first enforce the AML to the DSP, so Digital Asset Service Provider. So they created this entity, naming of the Digital Asset Service Provider, setting a specific set of rules. And that was a great challenge for everybody. On the same, on the one hand, you have a very very young companies, crypto native companies, who used to, most of them at this time, most of them have been used to run already before these regulations. So they run the business as a website providing services for any kind of service like you have AliExpress, Amazon, etc. So they sold crypto that way, and from the day they gave the register the license, the first step of the license, which we call the registering enregistrement, they basically become a financial institution. Mm-hmm. And it's like you are getting older, and from the time one day you are young, and the day after you are an adult, and you have to assume all the consequences, then the legal consequences on it. So the great challenge is for the leader of the compliance in such company is to implement a compliance culture. You have to implement a compliance culture. Of course, I knew that the next step would be MiFID-like regulation, but I had to accompany them step by step to let them to grow and make them understand the necessity and how useful the regulation is for the structuration of the business. And I think we get the job done because Meria is now one of those few crypto native company here in France who has a very good image from the regulator. So they identify us as a good player, as one of those companies who really want to get the job done properly and to make the industry stronger.
Really, really fascinating points you bring up. I'm trying to decide which ones to focus on, but there are quite a few. But I think your point about this challenge when you're a crypto native firm of, you know, switching quite quickly from, you know, you described it as from, you know, growing up to being an adult from a compliance perspective is a challenge, because historically compliance programs, you know, are very big, very comprehensive, and very hard. You know, the compliance requirements from traditional financial institutions are very hard for a startup to maintain. You know, it's something we see in our work quite often. And for us, being crypto native also means being able to start small in a very scalable way that is nonetheless, nonetheless allows showing the regulators what they need to see to feel confident that you can be compliant. But I think that's a really interesting really interesting insight into your experience, you know, doing that in France. So now, obviously, you've also emphasized in a few different ways how strategic Meria were about, you know, being compliant, and you know, obviously, also just hiring someone with your experience, you know, just bringing in a chief compliance officer with your experience, you know, is part of that. So I guess if I kind of take that, you know, if I take that into the current era, right? Like, you know, of a lot has happened obviously in the past year, and specifically in Europe, MiCA, which is, I think it's fair to say, correct me if I'm wrong, the most comprehensive cross-border crypto regulation in the world today.
Yeah, yes,
right? Across the EU has been introduced. Before we go into, you know, more specifically, what is MiCA? I do want to hear it from you because you know it better than most. How was that, like, you know, having kind of been at Meria at an earlier stage, going through the process you just described, you know, what's the difference now? Like, you know, in terms of like how you have to think about compliance, like it's kind of like there's been a quick switch between,
yes,
you know, very limited clear requirements to very broad clear requirements. Obviously, regulatory clarity is a good thing, but it's also a challenge. So leading Meria's compliance effort, like how has that affected you?
Yes, living at Meria and working at Meria helped also to identify the necessity of this level up on the from the regulatory side. I explain. I will use an illustration. You know, Terra Luna crisis has been very instructive and constructive for the industry.
Yeah,
and we lived it from
May or June. It was May or June last year, so a little over a year. 2020.
We lived it from the inside. I lived it from the inside because, you know, I was the first compliance legal officer who structured the lending solution in C5. So we were the first in France to deliver this this solution. And Terra Luna and one of the CRV and those who are using the stablecoin UST DeFi protocol who were using the UST stablecoin was one of the counterpart of our lending solution.
Oh wow! Okay, so you were quite deeply connected, or at least.
We saw the difficulty from the inside, and at this time we have been interviewed by the IMF, and they saw that from our perspective and from what we had to do, we did what we had to do, and more than it was expected from the. the current legal obligations of the digital asset service provider. We were beyond that because we applied the MiFID aspect as best practice in the way we handled it, and that helped us very much, you know. So the point is for crypto native companies, of course, we have to go step by steps, and the switch is very fast. But I think this time frame was a necessity. You know, at the end of 2022, when Christine Lagarde, which is the leader of the European Banking Authority, the European Central Bank. She pressed the EU legislators to have a deal quickly on MECA because of the situation in Ukraine. We thought that it was very early, you know, but once you leave the such crises like Terra Luna, and also when you see from the outside the crises like FTX and all industry have been impacted by it, as we learn also the lesson from Terra Luna, we were not impacted by FTX. But also when you see that, you realize that this level up is very necessary for the industry, and we have also to clean up the industry. Those who are not mature enough from the compliance perspective, as do not deserve their place anymore, and it has to be clear also, because the most we have such crises, the most we have a negative impact on the industry, and it will weaken our industry. And we now have to strengthen the industry. We have to structure it. We have to show our best profile to say that we are not the bad son-in-law of the financial industry, but we want to get in the family as one part of this. So we have lots of work to do, and I think this shift, even if it was a quick shift, is necessary and have been done on the right time.
Right. And you know, it's also funny, I mean, I think that an industry that is very concerned about how regulation is not moving in fast enough, you know, obviously, you know, can't complain when it happens too fast, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't think anyone is complaining. I think there's a lot of excitement across the board. But I also think, you know, we've been using that term regulatory clarity so much that now when we suddenly have it in one very important region, you know, like I think a lot of people are wondering, wait, but is that it? Are we there yet? And the answer is no, in my experience at least, because now we're kind of like at the stage of what comes after regulatory clarity.
Yes.
So there is regulatory clarity. Needless to say, putting aside for a second the fact that the regulation will probably evolve It needs to also look over time, because crypto is evolving so fast, and you know, DeFi is evolving, and I know European regulators are already thinking about the next stages. But you know, there's essentially a period of 18 months between when the regulation passed and you know when it's gonna be put fully into effect after it was ratified by all this by all the different countries. But this is a really interesting moment for crypto firms, and especially ones that are very thoughtful about compliance. In a way, you know, you and I talked about this, so I know you have an opinion, but in a way, it's an opportunity for us now. And when I say us, I mean the crypto community or the crypto compliance community, compliance teams for platforms, technology vendors, and the community at large to work together and show regulators how we take their regulation and turn it into a the best possible crypto native compliance program. You know, that's at least how I think about it and how, you know, we work with a lot of our clients to essentially take the regulation and turn it into a standard. And the more we can be proactive, the more that standard is likely to be, you know, fit for purpose for crypto. So anyway, I was supposed to ask a question. Instead, I made a statement. So I'll turn it into a question by asking you, what are your thoughts?
First, Ren, you know, as I am a law specialist, I want just to specify something.
Please.
MiCA is a regulation. As a regulation, it has a direct application. The countries do not need to ratify it. The application of it is direct. There is another set of rules which called the directive. Those directives needs the ratification from the member states. So MiCA is enforced right now, but will be fully applicable. The first step of application is in next year, at the beginning of next year for the stablecoin regulation, for part of the MiCA. And the whole part of the MiCA will be fully applicable 18 months after the after last month. And we also still as a grandfather clause for those DSP who have been registered in the local framework. We have 18 more months to get the MiCA license. So that
thank you so much for correcting me. I was speaking, you know, for correcting where I was not precise enough. Really, really helpful.
So what about the question? I think I totally agree with your statement. It's not done yet. Of course, it's just at the very beginning of the regulation of the industry. We are also have discussions with the regulators about about DeFi, because there are some drafts. Even in MiCA, there are some technical standards who has to be set by the ESMA, or the European Market Authority, and also the EBA, which is the banking authority, which is building the set of rules for the stablecoin part of the MiCA regulation. So there are lots of work to be done, lots of discussion to have with regulators, with lawmakers, and the very key points of MiCA is that finally we have a unique market for the digital asset in Europe, which means that 27 countries are now considered as one market from the digital asset perspective. And it's very important for all the companies who are settled in Europe, because they can address all the 27 countries on the same time once they get the MiCA license. And from the business perspective, it's very huge and game changer. That is the first thing. The first thing, and it's very significant. It's not said enough, I think. And the second one is, yes, we have lots of job to do. We have also to face the banking and financial companies who want to go to be part of the game, the crypto game also. So I think it's a very great challenge also for the crypto natives company.
Thank you for that insider's perspective. Just so helpful, because you know sometimes you obviously we all follow the news, etc. And you know, and we talk to a lot of people, but it's just you know, I just think you framed it in a very, very helpful way for me, even though I speak about this all the time, and I hope also for you know, our audience. So let me you know, kind of start leading us towards the end of the conversation, because we're moving towards time. But there's, you know, I let's do like a bit of a speed round. You know, you don't have to be, we're not that tight with time, we're not that rigid, but you know, a few minutes maybe on each of these questions, which I think are very important. So from your perspective, and based on everything you just said, if we look at the first at the next 6 to 12 months, you know, we all know we're in a bear market now. People are talking mm-hmm. about potentially coming out of it. Obviously, there's always a little bit of wishful thinking in the industry. So broadly for the industry, and also specifically from a, you know, regulatory and compliance perspective, what's your outlook for the next 6 to 12 months?
What's your
outlook? What do you predict for the next?
Okay. Outlook. Yeah, I did not hear the words. Yes. The next 6 months is very decisive for those who want to be a great player of the crypto industry in Europe. Personally, that is the first thing from my point of view. Why? Because you know, the first one who get the MiCA license and can address all these clients all around Europe is the one who can win the game. You know. Or at least the first part of the game. And I think even if there are some big crypto companies like right now, the very first, the crypto native stage of the game will be finished in 6 months, you know.
Interesting.
And then the financial industry part of the game will start after that. And that what I mean when I say those who had even from the banking sector or the financial one or the crypto native one, those who can have the first license, MiCA, the first MiCA license, will be a very good, great player for the next stage of this game. And I think all the companies have to keep it in mind, because the crypto native company has to avoid one danger. The great danger for the crypto native company is the glass ceiling. The glass ceiling. What does it mean? Most of, for few of them, and I hope the fewest it is, the better it is, do not see how hard it is to get a MiCA license. They do not see how strong they have to structure and build their internal program and all the governance program to get there. And I think this is also the great challenge for those companies. And even if it's a bear market, my best advice for them is to invest and to do more, the more investment they can do, even if it's in bear market, because you can get paid from your investment right now if you do it. But if you wait too late, you can lose the small part of the market you have now.
Wow. It's funny because I had a couple more questions for the speed round, but you already front run me by providing like all of the answers. If I try to pick a few headlines from the things mm-hmm. you said, and I think you I think you made a few very important statements. First of all, this idea that, you know, in 6 months we'll be moving essentially the industry in Europe, the crypto industry in Europe, crypto business in Europe, in 6 months is going to officially graduate from the crypto native phase to becoming a part of the finance industry.
Yes.
That's a really strong statement, and I think very, very important one to emphasize.
Yes.
Another thing you're saying is that it's, you know, you're basically cautioning. I was about to ask you about best practices, and you're basically cautioning not to underestimate how much you have to think very carefully about building your compliance program and how sophisticated it needs to be and how, you know, comprehensive it needs to be. You know, and I'll just speak from our experience that we have seen it happen where not enough attention was given. We see it often, unfortunately, often actually, not enough attention, not enough urgency is given to building a compliance program because, you know, it's, you know, in the life of a startup, sometimes 6 months can feel like 3 years ahead and definitely 18 months, but it's not something that's very easy to build quickly. And regulators expect you to be very thoughtful about it. So very, very important point there.
Yes, that is a shift of the mindset who has to be keep in mind by those the crypto natives company, and that's why we are here together, because I think having a solution like Solidus Labs is one of the important points to get to the financial industry perspective.
Well, I appreciate it. And just to be clear, I didn't pay you to say any of it.
No, you did not pay me. I said, this one, the lab. You are setting out a very good standard, and it has to be followed.
Yeah, I know. It was a total joke, and obviously, you know, there's just such a great community of compliance leaders like yourselves, you know, many of our partners who are doing other important things in the crypto compliance space that are all working in order to help crypto businesses be able to make, you know, successfully graduate, as you say.
That was my point.
And as you say, Europe is really an interesting test case now because it's one of the where this process is most advanced in the world. So I guess, you know, I'll finish by asking you if there's anything else you'd like to add, in terms of, is there anything we should be looking forward to from me, from Maria, anything, from you, or just any other important thoughts you want to share with our audience, who are ultimately many of which are compliance professionals who are, you know, looking to learn how to do their job in the best way.
Yeah. Just, I want to emphasize the fact that, crypto native companies have to avoid the glass ceiling danger and to keep in mind that there is a strong shift and a very huge shift of business we are getting to the financial industry, and we have to be mature enough to get there. You have to be professional enough to get there. The days for the, we cannot stay young forever.
Unfortunately,
from the human being, we want to stay young forever, but from the business perspective, it's good to get mature and to show that we are an adult, and all those key points has to be kept in mind. And we have to also you do not have to lose the sight that the banking and the financial companies will want to be part of the game. And the game is changing now.
Again, just beautifully said. I don't think I have anything else to add. So I will finish just by, I believe you do deserve a congratulations, or as they say, Abraham from in Israel, mazel tov, because you're planning to get married in the summer. So congratulations and mazel tov.
No, not married this summer. Next summer, I will prepare it. This summer.
And okay.
Next summer.
Anyway, in Madagascar, if I remember correctly.
Yes. You will get an invite.
Oh, wow. Well, in that case, then you're right. I will get to visit Madagascar soon. I'll be there for sure. No way I'm missing this one. And I promise, you know, I will not mention compliance for one evening. But no, Rija, thank you so much for taking the time joining us today and for being so open and helpful. I think your experience from the trenches of building a safe and regulated industry in France and in Europe is extremely valuable. And more, you know, and in addition to just thanking you for joining us, thank you for everything you're doing in order to make it happen. So thank you very, very much. I look forward to meeting you actually next week in ETH Paris.
Yes, I will be very happy to meet you. And thank you for having me. You guys are doing a great job and keep doing that because together we are trying to build a strong industry. And I think I hope and I'm sure that the US lawmakers also will work hard to give you to give the US market so the US crypto market legal certainty and also congratulations to the company who won a case against the SEC, which saying that XRP is not a security. So we are moving forward, and I think it was a very good time also for me to talk about it, our discussion is the day after this strong which we call it French jurisprudence. So as a lawyer and a crypto compliance officer, I am very happy to have this interview right now.
Oh, it's and you know what? And I have no doubt that it would be even more timely in 6 months from now. So maybe we can do it again then, and see if everything develops. And yes, it's just big things are happening in crypto regulation, compliance, and standards all the time. And of course, you're referring to the judge's opinion in the Ripple case. It was which he did accept the SEC's point on institutional sales, but generally, one of the main points is that having Ripple, the token XRP on exchanges, is not necessarily a security. So thank you for bringing it up. And thank you for joining us today, Rija.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Merci beaucoup. Au revoir.
Au revoir.